Double Take is an extension of the award-winning movie review show, Cinema Classics, which airs Thursdays at 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM, Columbus, Ohio. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, this podcast version features additional content and banter with guests. Double Take is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
Oh my, I'm thrilled.
Hooray!
And I'm John DeSando.
And I'm Audrey Harkonnen.
And this is Double Take. And we certainly have a classic today. Let me preface it by saying, in a short while, Steven Spielberg will come out with his new alien invasion movie.
Disclosure Day.
Thank you. Disclosure Day.
Disclosure Day.
I don't know why they don't pick simpler titles.
Yeah.
Even a guy like me. Anyway, the point is, who cares, because it's Steven Spielberg. So Audrey and I are going to reintroduce you to one of his great alien invasion movies.
Right.
Close Encounters of a Third Kind.
Yes.
1977, you were barely born.
Oh,
at that
barely.
Time. I know. And I, of course, was thriving at that time. I had a great time with my kids. And coming across this again, as I did in preparation for our show here, I'm thrilled. I don't know. How about you?
I think this is a great little nugget. No, it's a great big nugget.
Yeah, it is.
It's a great big nugget. And one of those first films that Spielberg just 1, 2, 3, 4, one right after the other, just knocked them out of the park. He just couldn't do any wrong.
And we'll look at some of his other pictures a little bit later on in the show. Right now, we've got enough to handle the first part of our show with Close Encounters of a Third Kind. I use the word magical. It could be any word. What makes it so odd? Well, you know, what does it do for you?
Well, in the first place, the basic story is an alien visitation to Earth instead
Thank
of
you.
Instead of
yes.
invasion, it's visitation.
Good, that's a good. So, and I say alien invasion because it's more generic.
Right.
But you are absolutely right. Boy, this is far from an invasion.
Right. And as opposed to the other sci-fi alien types of films of the period, 50s and 60s and so on, which involve conquest or domination or alienation. those kinds of themes. What is so magical about this is it's mutual exploration. The Earth is kind of preparing and trying to figure out how they can communicate with, because they know that these aliens are coming. They have communicated with them, and the aliens are interested in exploring us. So it's a mutual exploration, and not a lot of fear-mongering and not a lot of devastation going on. And I think that's what makes it so special.
Couldn't be more right. We still use alien invasion as a matter of battle. And,
yes.
And most of our Marvel and all that stuff is filled with that kind of hate, xenophobic hate, or fear.
Yes.
And Spielberg took it, as he does even today, as a blessing.
Yes.
As a sign, because I know that he has said more than once that he believes in aliens, as I do too. I believe there's other life out there.
There's got to be.
Yeah. what do we think we are? We're the only ones? And with the billions of stars and trillions, I'd have to say, you don't think there's a chance that there's a civilization out there? They may not look exactly like us, but I think it's out there.
Yes. This is his way of introducing a way to explore and a way to understand.
Yeah.
We're looking at this from a scientific standpoint. You've got technology, and I love looking at those old banks of computers they have all sitting around. It's very nostalgic and fun. But there's also the military and how they're not arming themselves.
Thank you.
They're trying to diffuse any confusion or any fear in the public. And then finally, there's a couple of just ordinary people that for some reason or another get caught up in this. So it's a story for each and every person as well. And that's why Spielberg does that so well.
I know, he does. He's so good. And I mean, beautifully said. It is. He's all full of humanity. That Spielberg is. There's nothing contentious about what he does when he presents that. There's some danger, of course, and especially when we look at our protagonist, played by Richard Dreyfuss, and his name is Roy.
Right. Poor Roy.
Right near. and you weren't with us, but usually you are with us when we go to these conventions. He was there at the most recent one, Comic-Con or stuff like that. You know how they have those conventions downtown? That Shatner is always there. Did you ever miss Shatner anyway? To see Dreyfuss, and of course he's aged so much, but they had him just perfectly, just the ordinary guy who's got three kids and a wife, played by, the beloved Terry Garr.
Yeah. Great job by Terry Garr.
Oh, I love her. And she died young in life. She died young, and I think everybody misses her there. But she does leave him.
Yes, she does. She takes the kids and runs because he builds a mountain in the living room. And he just knows that there's something going on, but he cannot figure out what it is. And poor Roy is tearing him up inside. But I think one of my favorite scenes is when he's on the phone with his wife trying to talk her to come back, and he'll get this under control, he'll figure this out. And you look over his shoulder, and there's a black and white TV that has ABC Nightly News on, and they're talking about a railroad derailment in Wyoming, and the long shot is Devil's Tower. And you keep saying, "Oh, just look over your shoulder. Look at the TV." And then he finally looks over.
It's so cheesy tension, suspense.
It was so great. And then he finally looks over his shoulder. And, there is something going on here.
Because he's been building these replicas of this huge mountain.
Yes.
And he can't figure it out. Nobody else can figure it out. And then once they show Devil's Tower.
In Wyoming.
I once made a part of one of my cross-the-country tours on my motorcycle. I made it to Devil's Tower, inspired by this.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool from a distance on your motorcycle. When you get up close, there are people spelunking all over it.
Oh. Okay.
You know, so it's not pure such as it is in here.
Yes.
But yet, there is, what a great choice of him. And even some marshmallow thing or whatever they have, or eggs, looks a little bit like the mountain, right?
Yeah. Yes. He's seeing it everywhere. And then when he comes to the realization that there is something going on, and he is going to further explore it, I just think that's a great moment.
I was always, and I still to this day, questioning him leaving his family. I mean, how do you leave your whole family? Now, granted, she took three kids and mothers, but she didn't say, like, this is the end of our relationship, was it?
I don't think that was the case. But
he took it as a way of leaving with a good conscience.
Yes.
I felt that was a bit, couldn't do that with my kids. So, and I don't know what those, I don't know how they depict those kids. A little boy.
Right.
Whatever her name is just as cute as can be. And Melinda Dillon's Jillian.
Yeah.
Her son is a just duty pie, the one they abducted. Now look at they abducted.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Huh? This is kidnapping.
Yes, yes. But he goes running into the dark, laughing, and then, of course, he turns around and looks over his shoulder as the people are walking on the alien spacecraft, and he's saying, bye, with a big smile on his face. I mean, how can you not? It just warms your heart over and over.
All right, Audrey Hakkinen, in this part of our show, if people want to hear more, and they always want to hear more from you, they would prefer if I shut up, which I try to do as much as I can. Anyway.
Well, I think that given what's going to be presented by Spielberg in just a day or two, I think we have to review this because this is part one of the story. And the disclosure day is part two. So let's refresh our memories and let's enjoy the preparation for disclosure day.
Yeah. Wonder, Audrey, before we look at other Spielberg works, the relationship between Richard Dreyfuss's Roy Neary and Melinda Dillon, the woman he meets with the little kid.
In search of her little boy, yes.
In search of her, isn't this a little bit wild for Spielberg or not? I'm reading into it.
I think you perhaps may be reading into it because for me, it didn't interrupt the story. It just kind of flowed. Right. They have something in common. They're in this together. And they're going to support one another because they know they have this secret of some kind. And the two of them are going to be able to help one another. That's what I see.
For for those of us who've grown up with movies and we are so cynical, we figure there's going to be a romance going on there. Spielberg has nothing to do with that.
No.
He's not having, we see a genuine affection between the two. I think they even have a final kiss or whatever.
I think they do.
His family left him, but I don't think he's left his family. I just think he's going to a new family.
Right. Well, he is being congratulated by Francois Truffaut.
Talk to me.
Oh, my gosh.
What element of this show is Francois Truffaut?
Well, I just want to know how Spielberg in 1977 happens to net this man of international film, repute.
Yeah.
And, oh my gosh, director and in Europe, and he takes this little part in this film.
Refuses to interject his directorial expertise on this.
And most of the time he's speaking French. Yeah. He's not even trying to be an American or he's a French scientist.
Yes, he is.
And oh my gosh, how did that happen?
As part of Spielberg's ability to draw in the world, to his little world.
Yes.
He draws it in by having Francois Truffaut, not an American chief scientist, but Francois Truffaut as the chief scientist. And it works.
It works.
And it prepares us for that bridge between us and the new culture that we're going to meet. It's just really, I think, it's really an inspired casting.
Absolutely.
Who would have thought? Most everybody knows that it ends well. And most people know that Steven Spielberg was pressured to put on an extra 10 or 12 minutes of the actual aliens coming out of their ship. He wasn't happy about doing that. He definitely was not happy about showing the inside of the ship.
Right.
And I don't blame him. I think showing aliens or monsters is a worthless task. Let our imaginations do
the work. I agree with you. Let our imaginations just...
I mean, who's to say they even have anything that looks like a head and arms? I mean, what is it? What do you think?
Yeah. We don't know. Let us all imagine for ourselves. I agree. Well, let's start way, way, way back with Spielberg's initial offerings and the beginnings of his film work. All the way back to 1971, he does a made-for-TV movie, and I remember seeing it when it came out.
Get out.
And it's called Duel.
Huh.
And it is amazing, frightening, weird, but captivating. You cannot stop. It's Dennis Weaver, traveling salesman, and he's on the road somewhere in rural California. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, there is a semi-truck. And it's not a new-looking truck. It's an old, battered-up, but it's a big truck. Begins to pursue him, begins to taunt him, tries to run him off the road. Stressful, and you never see the driver. It's the cat and mouse genre. It ends badly. There's crashes, and you still never know why, out of nowhere, this truck starts to pursue this man in a car. It just is. And that is 1971. 1974, he does Sugarland Express, which...
Oh, yeah. More famous.
Yeah. It was fine. It's not one of his standouts, but
okay.
Goldie Hawn does a good job in a very serious role.
Okay.
She does a very, very good job. But then, what comes next? Jaws.
That's
Jaws.
A career maker.
Hey,
this is not Aliens, but it is an alien.
It is an alien. It's again, one of these small, it's summer, everybody's laying around on the beach, and then this monster begins to terrorize everyone. Just that thoughtfulness of taking something that we take for granted or that we don't pay any attention to and turn it on its ear.
And you remind me, as you're talking, just interject here, I'll bet there's a Twilight Zone similar to Close Encounters. Serling was tuned in to the notion of aliens. I love that so much, and this is why I love Steven Spielberg's alien invasion stuff, because Rod Serling, when he got on top of it, how about the one, They Will Serve Us?
How to Serve Humans. Yes, it was a cookbook. Yes, that was just too good. Yeah, that was just too classic. But yeah, after Jaws, throughout the 80s then, Raiders of the Lost Ark, E.T., Poltergeist, Twilight Zone, Indiana Jones times two. He's got Color Purple, Goonies, Schindler's List.
I can't keep track.
Oh my gosh. Genres he goes through. and does so well in all of them.
Yeah.
And speaking of which, he's the most commercially successful director, well, tied only with William Wyler.
He's one of your boys.
One of my boys. 13 Best Picture nominations.
Is that right?
Yes.
Wyler's.
I know. And Wyler was the same way. There was no genre that he couldn't master, that he couldn't do. Spielberg is the same.
But you mentioned Schindler's List.
Yes.
Isn't this quite a bit different from almost anything he does?
Oh, my gosh. This is a tragic story. And the subtlety of making something somewhat positive out of this horrific circumstance.
Do you think I'm stretching it by saying it's still in the alien motif?
That's not stretching it too far.
I know, I was hoping you'd say that.
Yeah. Now that you mention that, you could put it in that monster movie kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much so.
And in Schindler's List, besides the Nazis being the aliens, would be the little girl whose image in the red dress that she's in, the images you cannot forget in Schindler's. She stands out again because, among other things, you can accuse Steven Spielberg of loving kids, of having a childlike attitude in his movies.
So. Very much so. Huh. Yeah, yeah.
No, I didn't bring with me. I left actually at home my list of non-scientific Spielbergs, but he did Minority Report and some other things.
Yes,
that
yes. Ready Player One.
He always,
I don't know.
Hey, you know, it's a long time seen it, but somebody else, our mutual friend, K.G. Klein, Ken. I mean, he's been doing stuff recently.
Right.
There are other great movies about aliens. And my favorite, and putting Close Encounters really nearby this one, 2001, is for great movies.
It just is one of the greatest of the great.
Doesn't it just dominate everybody else?
Oh, it just,
even Spielberg?
Oh, Kubrick just. In such a grand and yet sparing manner.
Yes, right.
He tells this phenomenal story with very little dialogue, mostly symbolism. And our friend Hal, and...
Well, and before that, Metropolis.
Metropolis.
You know.
I think that was 27.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, Fritz Lang.
Really, Fritz Lang's really early on it. Prefacing the Star Wars image, replica, of her in Metropolis. And I'm thinking, Star Wars is pretty big stuff. How do we put that next to Close Encounters? Is there any connection, or is there any way of saying one is better than the other?
I don't know if you can accept that. In Star Wars, you have that battle, undercurrent of war and conflict, and in Close Encounters, you do not. And I think that's about the only difference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say Star Wars, far more influential of a movie than Close Encounters. Everything, we still have Star Wars going on today.
Yes, that is.
You know, variations of that theme.
That is true. That is true.
As I was looking at you expanding with your arms and so on, it encompasses so much more. Ours is relegated to a certain platform in Wyoming.
Right.
And it has a narrow scope to it. And even though it's a pretty big landing place, it doesn't have what Star Wars has.
Which is the infinite skies. I think that's a big attraction for a lot of people. It just,
It does express the difficulty of communication among cultures.
Yes, yes.
And I'm thinking of our arrogance and going and starting wars in places where we have no idea what they're saying. We don't know their language.
Their culture.
Their culture, not.
Very much.
And if we had a whole bunch of diplomats whom we trusted to do it, that would be fine. But I don't think we have anybody who believes that he can communicate, for instance, with Iran. And yet he does it through media and other ways of doing it. But it reminds me of how difficult that is one of the components. Like in the current Pressure, the D-Day movie.
Yes.
And that is trying to understand what people are going to do when you don't even know, when you don't really know their culture. I mean, we've done that so many times, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Do you think I'm liberal? I think so. We are having too much fun. Audrey Harkin.
I think that Catch Me If You Can was a very, very fun, based on a real individual.
Frank Abagnale or whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that Spielberg? Very good.
Yeah. One of the little nuggets that he did. And I think
just open up IMDb and look at Steven Spielberg's filmography. It's several pages. And what makes it difficult is not just the number of films that he has made that have been successful, is the quality of those.
Right.
I can't digest it.
Yes.
I look at one and say, what a terrific film. Uh-huh. Did he actually do that? Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
And just hope he's with us forever, and he's still doing it. And boy, Audrey, am I looking forward to, what's it called, Disclosure Day?
Disclosure Day. 50 years after, 50 years after that Close Encounters, yeah. Now we have Disclosure Day, and maybe he'll tell us some more secrets.
And maybe you and I will talk about it again once we've seen that.
Yes.
You know, that's going to be interesting. Whomever I talk to, our friend K.G. Klein is going to be doing the interview with me. So I'll have a few words to say. Otherwise, K.G. will be filling in for all of us. Anyway, the film that we're talking about is Close Encounters of a Third Kind. And we're also anticipating Steven Spielberg's new science movie. What do you recommend to a family?
Oh, it's a great... great family outing. Just great.
We saw this on Prime. Did we see through Close Encounters?
Oh, I just went to the library and got the disc. What the heck? Yeah.
You get it.
I know.
All right. Audrey Harkonnen, see you again sometime in the future.
In the future.